The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from AARP Magazine, the August-September 2018 issue, continuing that from last week, and also probably from Money Magazine for September of this year. And I remind you that today's programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now, continuing on AARP's emphasis in this issue on Latin American people who have made a difference culturally in this country. We've got interviews or brief articles on several people. Next, we have Andres Cantor, who says immigrating to America was brutal. But the now sportscaster, World Cup narrator, and entrepreneur saw a land of opportunities. My experience as an immigrant when I moved from Argentina to the U.S. in 1979 was brutal. From an emotional and cultural standpoint, I was literally illiterate when I arrived here as a teenager. I couldn't understand a word. The culture was very different. At the beginning, I couldn't adjust. I went back to Argentina. But after a year, I came back, forged my life. It was very tough. I've now been a U.S. citizen for more than 20 years. For me, it means that I belong here. I love this country. It's where I live, where I spent most of my life, and where I built my family. I am what I am because I am from Argentina. But I'm as proud of being a U.S. citizen as I am an Argentinian citizen. I have dual citizenship, and I have allegiance to both countries. The U.S. is a wonderful country, a land of opportunities for all who come here. Obviously, nothing is given to you. You have to work very, very hard and fight to establish yourself. But opportunities arise on a personal and professional level, and they are always there if you look for them and you work for them. I'm not sure that can be said of too many countries in the world. There are few unifying things in the world that everyone can relate to, and soccer, like music, is one of them. It's played in the entire world, and it's watched and followed by the entire world. Soccer and the World Cup, which is my bread and butter, is a global transforming event here. For Hispanics, it represents a source of passionate national pride and of unity, being able to share it with family and friends here or back home. But they live the World Cup experience differently than the other countries in the World Cup. Everyone who loves soccer and lives in this country was bummed out when the U.S. team didn't qualify for the World Cup this year. Back in 1994, I'm the one who first named the U.S. national soccer team La Selección de Todos, which means the national team for everyone. Even though Hispanics in the U.S. often root for the team of their family's country, we all root for the U.S. team, too, because it is the team that unifies us. A native of Buenos Aires, Andres Cantor was the first sports announcer to introduce English-speaking audiences in the United States to the bellowing call of "Goal!" to mark a score in soccer matches. Currently part of Telemundo Deportes, Cantor is also the owner of the radio network Football de Primera, where he hosts a daily show. Winner of multiple Emmys, he has been honored with a Hispanic Heritage Award and as Sports Personality of the Year by the American Sportscaster Association. FIFA World Magazine has named Cantor one of the world's most legendary broadcasters. Next, we have a piece from Sandra Cisneros. She is an author and activist, and it says she's nomadic but treasures her heritage. Sandra Cisneros is a Mexican-American writer. She was born in Chicago, the only daughter in a family of seven children. Her first novel, The House on Mango Street, from 1984, sold over 6 million copies and has been translated into more than 20 languages. Today it's considered a coming-of-age classic and is taught in classrooms across the United States. Over the past 50 years, she's also written several collections of poetry, essays, short stories, and children's books. Her most recent book, A House of My Own, Stories from My Life, 2015, is a collection of true stories and nonfiction pieces that span 3 decades of her life. Cisneros has worked as a teacher, a counselor, a college recruiter, a poet in the schools, and an arts administrator. Her numerous awards include the Texas Medal of the Arts, a MacArthur Fellowship, and, in 2016, the National Medal of Arts, presented to her by President Barack Obama. The founder of 2 foundations, she is widely recognized as a mentor to many writers. A dual citizen of the United States and Mexico, she makes her home in the state of Guanajuato. Now this says, Sandra Cisneros finds family and community everywhere. I have a visceral reaction when I hear the word Hispanic because it was a term imposed on us during the Nixon administration. It's a term I always had difficulty accepting because it seemed to me a catch-all, a false term to group us together, a group with diverse histories and relationships with one another. Lumping us all together as Hispanics, whether it's someone who just arrived from Spain or someone whose family was in Texas before Texas was even a state, seems to me a lack of awareness of who I am and the history of my people. I try to respect everybody's definition of what they call themselves and why. Mine is a generational difference. I'm a woman who is 63 years old. I grew up having seen a lot of changes of how the government sees us as immigrants and Latinos. Before, I defined myself as Chicana and Latina. Not anymore. At estas alturas he cambiado. We can belong to both. That rich place in between where a lot of creativity and innovation comes from. There's complexity in our situation and globalization of our education, travel, movement, and migration at this time in history. We shouldn't define ourselves simply by borders. I'm very intuitive. I'm an empath, and I always feel like Divina Providencia illuminates my next step, but not the path. About 5 years ago, during a visit to San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, I had a metaphysical experience. One night the spirits woke me to give me a clear message. It was literally a wake-up call, and I turned the light on and sat up in bed. I trusted that the spirits knew better than Sandra Cisneros. So after living in Chicago and San Antonio, in 2013, I moved to Mexico. I don't see myself moving back to the United States, but I also don't see myself living in one place for very long. So who knows? If a voice came to me in the middle of the night and said, "You've got to move," I would do it because I would follow anything that the spirits told me. I know people say, "Hey, qué loca," but I think it's loco to be living someplace that makes you unhappy. So who's the loca? Right now, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be of service, para ver cómo puedo ayudar. Latinos contribute a lot to America. They give us a great sense of respect for family and elders. They have the great American work ethic. They get the job done, and they're not lazy. And I think something great they give that you can see exemplified in the film Coco is their sense of the collective, the indigenous idea of community that's so beautiful, taking care of others. That generosity and compassion that we see comes from our indigenous roots. It's not every man for himself. It's about taking care of family and community, looking after others. And that's a wonderful thing we need right now. And this was as told to Veronica Villafañe. Next, also from the August-September AARP magazine, but a little change in pace. We have a Q&A here on a muscular response to diabetes. A specialist weighs in on actions you can take after diagnosis by Heather Herlock. More than half of the Americans who will be diagnosed with diabetes this year are between ages 45 and 64. When it comes to managing your long-term health, how you act shortly after diagnosis is critical, says Mehta N. Munshi, MD, director of the Geriatric Diabetes Program at the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. Question. Okay, let's say I'm 60 and in relatively good health, but diabetes has entered my life. Should I, as a matter of course, see a specialist? Answer. It's okay to stay with your primary care physician. At this stage, however, what's really important is to adopt lifestyle changes, specifically regarding diet and exercise. Many times the primary care setting doesn't allow for counseling with a dietitian and an exercise physiologist. I often see people who were diagnosed 10, 15, 20 years ago, but never had that counseling session, and as a consequence, they don't have appropriate knowledge and understanding of how to make these changes. Diabetes is not like high blood pressure or cholesterol, where you take a pill and then things are under control. You have to make changes to your lifestyle. Question. So, what can those in their 50s and 60s do to protect themselves from diabetes complications as they age? Answer. There's plenty of evidence that if you're in the pre-diabetes range and if you're eating healthy and exercising, then your chances of developing diabetes decrease significantly. And if you have diabetes, your chances of developing complications decrease. The key is to combine diet modification with exercise. Even a 5-7% weight loss lessens the risk of developing diabetes if you have prediabetes. Exercise, though, is critical. If you try to lose weight simply through dieting, then you're losing not just fat, but also muscle, which is unhealthy. Question. Why is losing muscle particularly bad for people with diabetes? Answer. Muscle loss with aging is called sarcopenia, and it's a natural part of the aging process. As you get older, it's not only hard to put on muscle, it's hard to maintain muscle. If you restrict calories without adding exercise, there's a further decline in muscle mass. Low muscle mass causes an increase in insulin resistance, which translates to increased glucose levels. In addition, low muscle mass can make you feel tired, cause balance problems, and increase the risk of falls. Question, what is the best way to treat diabetes? Answer, a patient needs to work with his or her physician to find the right approach. Often I'll see a diabetic patient who's gone in for surgery, whether hip replacement or heart bypass. The person comes out on 4 insulin injections a day because the doctor overseeing the care during hospitalization was treating the blood sugar aggressively. Then that level of treatment sticks after recovery, even if the amount of medication isn't necessary. That puts the patient at a high risk of hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, which can lead to bad outcomes. Sometimes when there are a number of other health issues involved, a treatment plan may not be the perfect regimen for diabetes, but it could be the best regimen for the patient. Now we're going to go back to an earlier edition, an earlier issue of AARP magazine. This is October-November 2017, and this is an interview with Ted Danson. How Ted Danson found his balance. When he closed down the bar at Cheers, character Sam Malone had to find a new way forward. This is by David Hochman. The happiest years of Ted Danson's life came after he let his hair go gray. You can see the white emerging at the temples in that final episode of Cheers, which was less a night of television than a national group hug. On May 20, 1993, with farewell parties underway coast to coast, an astounding 80.4 million viewers watched proprietor Sam Malone shut the lights on a place where, sing it now, everybody knows your name. Danson played a shallow philanderer among a group of boozy, relatable regulars at a watering hole that somehow served all of us. His career may have been at a peak, but Danson's life was approaching a nadir. Sure, he had international fame and a couple of Emmys. He had also suffered through a costly divorce. His highly publicized 18-month relationship with Whoopi Goldberg was ending, and he found himself at the center of an unwanted controversy over his notorious appearance in blackface at a Friars Club roast. At 45, he was tired of being considered a carousing lightweight. In fact, it was Danson who first pushed to end Cheers after 11 seasons, telling interviewers it was kind of sad for a character that old to be chasing women around a bar. But until then, his only hugely successful role outside of Cheers was in the movie Three Men and a Baby, where he played yet another vapid playboy. Something had to change. A lot had to change, in fact. Today, at 69, Ted Danson is back starring in a hit comedy, The Good Place, but he has spent the past quarter century redefining himself as a serious actor in dramatic roles in Damages and CSI, as an author and leading environmental activist, and as a family man with a 22-year-strong marriage to actress Mary Steenburgen. Over a recent breakfast near his home in Santa Monica, Danson opened up about the ways he has found to keep his life in balance. Balancing trick one, fight fear with gratitude. When they met on the set of the road movie Pontiac Moon in 1993, Steenburgen was a single mother of two children. Though she had an Oscar for the 1980 film Melvin and Howard, the actress hadn't quite shaken the anguish of an Arkansas childhood spent in the shadow of serious illness. Her father suffered multiple heart attacks. Hollywood legend has it that Danson helped Steenburgen find happiness after her traumatic youth, but it was Danson who needed a rescue. "I was a mess and a half," he admits, crediting therapy with getting him through that time. "I thought I'm incapable of being in a relationship, but I was working on myself." Ironic how life works in those moments. Once you throw your arms up and surrender, a lot of times things come your way. Danson credits Steenburgen with helping him quiet an undercurrent of anxiety that no level of fame or success can quite squelch. "There's always fear, and it's all the human stuff," he says, "jobs, work, money, kids, health. Usually when I have a fearful thought, I flip it into gratitude, like I think, 'Oh dear, where's Mary? She's not home. Something must have happened.' I tell myself, 'Thank God I have the opportunity to be married to a woman whom I love so much, because that love is what makes me afraid that she might be hurt or something.' I tell myself, 'Aren't you lucky?'" Having an attitude of gratitude has helped Danson overcome his history of financial fears as well, an anxiety fed by a childhood where money was always tight. "The unspoken message I got as a child was that we had nothing," he says. "We didn't have TVs. I looked like a ragamuffin. My clothes were all hand-me-downs. My dad worked and there was enough money for the necessities, but getting more and more money was never a goal. My philosophy is that you're a tube for money," he says. "It just comes through you. And as long as you don't panic, stay happy and grateful, appreciate what you have, and know what you want to do, it'll come." Still, the actor's natural anxiety surfaces from time to time. Danson is a bit of a hypochondriac, but in the most charming way, says Steenburgen, who says her husband invariably gets an injury or ailment whenever he's starting a job, or close to finishing one, as he is today. "That's probably why his back is acting up. It's too freaky that I can tell you exactly," he says, reaching behind him, "but it's the right SI pelvic joint on the L5 vertebra. I'm guessing it just means I'm panicked. I'll never work again." Steenburgen chuckles later when she hears that Danson's been fretting about work again. "In all the years I've known him," she says, "the longest Ted's gone without a job was maybe 20 minutes. Balancing trick two, as you grow older, work harder. Near the end on Cheers, Danson pulled a stunt that left audiences flabbergasted. The actor popped off a theretofore unmentioned toupee and waved it at co-star Rhea Perlman. It was as if Danson was signaling to the world there was more to him than brainless brawn. Remember, this was the guy who rose to fame as the manly Aramis man. Yet, under that man mane was a thoughtful, expressive, and yes, aging mortal, and one who was done, he says, hiding his bald spot and sitting in a salon full of ladies with tinfoil in their hair every other Sunday. Age is a marker, but it's not everything, he says. What we are capable of has a lot more to do with our determination, our creativity, and our passion than the number of candles on the cake. While you're living your life, it really doesn't mean that much unless you allow it to. Not that Danson has always been successful at embracing his journey into his eighth decade. When you're getting older, you definitely bump into, I'm diminishing. But that's usually what you think about when you're in the middle of a passage, not when you've landed into whatever the new age is. When you're 37, you go, oh my God, I'm not 25 anymore, how horrible. Then you're 55 and you go, I hope I'm still relevant. I hope I can still run with the bulls. Then you get past that and you start to really enjoy being around younger people. You're not competitive anymore. You just kind of marvel. For Danson, coping with age is a simple matter of applying himself. To keep his remarkably trimmed form, the 6'2" Danson hikes, bikes, and works out with a personal trainer named Flavio at Gold's Gym. These are my professional athlete years, he reasons. Professional athletes are always in rehab and playing hurt. That's me at 70. I have to work harder to memorize lines now. Same with my body. I have to work a little harder, but so what? It's like the coach still puts you in the game, but you have to stay up later and work harder. That's cool. Indeed, Danson's openness to the natural changes in life has given him an enormous level of optimism about the future. I want to be 90 and feel what that is, because I don't think anybody knows what it'll be like for us. It's all changing. I recently had my knee replaced, and it's like the best thing that ever happened to me, he says, slapping a leg. Balancing trick 3. Know what's important. Be kind. Danson grew up outside Flagstaff, Arizona. His father was an anthropology professor at the University of Arizona, Tucson, and ran a Native American history museum. People don't really know this about Ted, Steenbergen says, but he grew up with friends who were either Hopi, Navajo, or the sons and daughters of ranchers, and he had enormous freedom to just explore and appreciate the vast, idyllic landscape around him. To this day, Steenbergen says, he's got a very strong sense that life means more than the number of roles you've played or how much money you've made, and I think that comes from experiencing the world a certain way when he was very young. Emotion rises in Danson when he talks about his upbringing. His family may have dressed him in hand-me-downs, but there wasn't a day that went by that I wasn't told that I was loved in one form or another, he says, tearing up. Of his parents, he says, they both had the deaths they absolutely wanted. My dad was watching this old house in his comfortable chair. He'd had a steak, probably fibbed about his second drink, and my mother called out, Ned, are you enjoying your TV show? She was able to come pull up a chair, sit next to him, hold his hand, feel his pulse. That was it. His mother's passing took longer. A devout Catholic all her life, Jessica Danson was open to spirituality in all forms, and when, at 89, a bout of pneumonia took hold, she opted to remain at home rather than suffer indignity in the hospital. We had the most amazing 2 weeks, he says. People came to say goodbye. She didn't want any morphine or drugs. She wanted to be there every second. When my mother died, I was 57, highly successful and content. But when I would take time to grieve, I was like a 9-year-old sobbing. I really didn't know how I could go on without her. All my philosophical and religious thoughts went out the window. Death is so intensely real. When someone close to you dies, it shines a light on life's basics, love, family, relationships, what's important. And what is important? Do the right thing in this moment and be happy, healthy, joyful. That's about it. Be kind, and the rest will take care of itself. Balancing trick 4. Surround yourself with passionate people. Danson says that his secret to late career success is simple. He stopped thinking of himself as a star. My philosophy is, don't hang on to whatever degree of success or celebrity you have, he explains. Find the smartest people you can and work with them, even if it means taking a smaller role. Get lost in something that inspires you. Find the people who can make you a better person. That's how you stay fresh. In my case, I'm working with the most creative people in the world, and they have a project they just have to do come hell or high water. I want to be part of that. If some writer gets hired to make something for Ted Danson, they won't have the same degree of creative passion. If you're Seinfeld or somebody like that, you can do it. But if you're just an actor for hire like me, you need to go find the best play to be in. Creative passion might be the best way to describe Danson's relationship with his wife. "I like the way Mary laughs and smiles," he says. "I like her willingness to say yes, to leap off tall buildings of life. I love her sense of fairness and right and wrong. And I don't think you're supposed to say this when you're almost 70, but she's very sexy." It's almost intimidating spending time with Ted and Mary because of how solid and loving and connected they are, says Kristen Bell, Danson's co-star in The Good Place. "Honestly, it's beautiful how they obsess over each other." Complete each other is more like it. "Mary and I can do absolutely nothing together and do it really well, which is why the empty nest did not hit us hard," Danson says. Yet doing nothing doesn't come naturally to the pair. At 64, Steenburgen juggles movie and TV roles and packs her free time with side projects. "Look at her," says Danson. "In her late 50s, music came crashing into her head, and today she has a publishing deal at Universal in Nashville and is writing with some of the best writers in the world. Me, I'm very happy to go act and take a nap." In fact, Danson doesn't have much time for napping either. He's an active board member at Oceana, where he raises money each year to support marine causes, and co-authored a book, Oceana, on what he sees as a looming global catastrophe. His organization has protected more than 1 million square miles of open sea, fighting bottom trawling in sensitive habitat areas and working to keep sea turtles out of commercial fishing gear. It helps having friends in high places. The guest list at Danson and Steenburgen's 1995 wedding on Martha's Vineyard included Tom Hanks, Woody Harrelson, James Taylor, and Laura Dern, and a pair of old Arkansas pals of Steenburgen's named Bill and Hillary. Ted and Mary and the Clintons frequently see each other, but it's rarely to discuss politics. "We talk about anything and everything," Danson says, "but mainly it's Mary and Hillary talking about movies and books and now mostly grandchildren." Balancing trick number 5, accept that life will be messy. For all his thoughtfulness toward life, it's self-deprecation that has long been Danson's calling card. He plays a caricature of himself on Curb Your Enthusiasm and in a series of ads for Smirnoff Vodka. Not taking himself too seriously helps him avoid fixating on the tough times. "If I'd made one step differently or corrected my stakes, which are cringers, would I take that away if it were to alter anything about where I am now? No, life is just messy. The older I get, the more I see it's okay to be imperfect, because you can still grow and make changes in your life. It's not like you're finished at 70 or 75. Our breakfast over, Danson can't help but let his inner hypochondriac poke through. "The trouble with these kinds of interviews," he says, "is that you answer all these deep questions, and then you walk out the door and step in a big pile of dog poop, slip and break your hip because you pontificated way too much." And that's it for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll listen next time and that you enjoyed this. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and today's programming is generously underwritten by Celebi Chiropractic. Celebi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, give us a call at 919-832-5138. We'd love to hear from you.